the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah.
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us. We are coming to you live from O'Rourke's Public House, located at Eddy Street Commons, just south of the Notre Dame campus.
We're
You can absolutely see it, and it's actually starting to lighten up a little bit after a cruddy looking morning.
Yeah, it was.
My goodness.
It's okay. It'll be 51 by the end of the day.
Yeah, of course. Just wait a little bit. The weather will change, right?
Yeah.
Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with four fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It is Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon lime, and black cherry. And thanks, of course, to O'Rourke's Public House and General Manager Danny Bennett. There you go, sir. You can set that down right there for having us out here today. Glad to be with you. And stop on by for lunch. A good lunch crowd already out here. Get a lunch combo, one of O'Rourke's specialties. The lunch combos include the mac and cheese, the Blarney, and the Blarney, of course, is basically your corned beef, brisket, sauerkraut, melted Swiss, Thousand Island dressing, all on rye
bread.
I got a
lunch special today.
What did you get?
Well, I got the Guinness stew.
Guinness stew?
Yeah, with a salad.
All right. I'm getting the Asian tuna salad.
Ooh.
Is what I've got coming my way. I haven't had like a nice, tasty, flavorful big salad for a while, so.
Well, we're going to find out if
going high on the roughage.
If an Irish pub is going to be able to handle the,
yeah, that's
the
right.
Asian salad.
You will find out. You've got your delicious looking Guinness.
Yeah.
That was just
isn't
set
that,
down
isn't that
at
nice?
Your table.
Good pour right there.
That is a very good
pour.
Cool. I'm going to have to take a picture of that pour.
Look at that thing settling.
As a matter of fact, that's right. So stop on by, have some lunch with us today at O'Rourke's Public House, Eddy Street Commons. We're actually sitting where Jack Nolan and Mike Bray typically sit for the Mike Bray show. So you're in high company. Just don't slam your headphones down over there, okay?
I will do my best not to do that at any point, Sean. Just be careful what questions you ask.
All right. Oh, well, will I get to finish the question? That is... We kid because we care, of course. Gut punch after gut punch for that Notre Dame men's basketball team. And I think that, what would that have been? Wednesday night, that was the exclamation point. You lead Florida State all game long. They lead, the Seminoles lead for all of 19 seconds, yet they walk out of Purcell Pavilion with a victory.
Oh,
and
man.
It is, Notre Dame has lost 12 games this season, 7 of them by single possessions, including that one. Both games against a top 5 team in the, or a top 10 team in the country, Florida State, have come down to single possessions, home and away, for Notre Dame this season.
It's tough. It's a tough way to lose.
It is. Let me ask you this. Darren and I talked about this last night on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. If Notre Dame gets an NIT bid, which, I mean, it's looking more and more like now, and I think you can pretty much say with certainty, they're going to have to win the ACC tournament to get an NCAA bid. If they get an NIT bid, should they accept it?
Yeah, I don't think that there's a negative to doing that. Unless collectively everyone just wants it to be over.
Just wants to go home.
Like, all right, guys, we're done now after this. I don't know. You know, the pulse, or the heartbeat of the team, what do the leaders want? What does Mike Bray want to do as far as do we just cut ties and move on to the next season? Sometimes mentally that's a really good thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still nice going out there and playing games versus, okay, we're now in off-season mode.
We're done.
You know, so, but I don't know where the guys are mentally. I know it's been a frustrating season for everybody. So sometimes when that's the case, maybe you just say, all right, we're done. You know, that's it. Let's get our focus on. Let's start with a clean slate. Let's really start to gear towards, you know, our strength and conditioning in the off season, finish strong in the classroom, and then let's focus on next year.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything to be said for, well, you get extra games, and so you're looking toward next year. Just because you lose guys like Mooney, Gibbs, Pfluger, you know, you're going to lose a pretty good core of guys right there, even though you do have another group of guys back. But I don't think there's anything necessarily to be said for that. It's a matter of, do they want to keep playing together? Do they want to go out and compete? Again, I mean, it's not like this team has lost its competitiveness, because when you're talking about all these close games that they've been in, that they just haven't been able to push over the hump. So, you know, if they want to go out, I think that's a great point, is what do your seniors want to do? Or what does the leadership on your team want to do? If they want to play, then I think you play. I do think you missed, and you didn't even go to the NIT last year. So you want to get to something, I think. You want some kind of postseason sitting next to your name. I realize that there's a big difference in atmosphere between the NCAA tournament and playing in the NIT. You're home. It's typically a quick turnaround. The tickets are not cheap, so you're probably going to have 5,000 to 6,000 fans potentially sitting at that game, and that could be on the high end, just because there is some disappointment with being in the NIT. But I do think that, you know, there's a chance they're going to win 20 games still. They have Virginia Tech tomorrow. That would be 19. You win a game in the ACC tournament, that's 20. You have 20 wins. I think you should go, as long as your team is in for going.
The competitiveness in me, I'd want to go play. It's still a tournament. Yeah. I mean, maybe I liken it to when I was playing rookie ball, you know, or, you know, single A. We won championships both years. No one's saying, hey, great job.
Right.
Set the World Series.
Right.
But it's still, I think it's still cool to go in and play well, obviously. And a championship really at any level. And I'm not trying to go and say that, you know, if they win the NIT, it's this huge, great accomplishment, but it's still a championship. It'd still be a win.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you rather, if you're Notre Dame...
Is this another one of those weird Notre Dame poll questions that we talked about?
Yeah.
How did that go?
You loved that one last week, didn't you?
Oh, my goodness.
Would you rather go one and done in the NCAA tournament, or say, get at least to the NIT Final Four playing Madison Square Garden?
I guess to that, if we're filling in the blanks, if you'd say that they made the NCAA tournament, they probably won the ACC tournament.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I will take that one.
Because an at-large bid is out of the question at this point.
I think just for the sake of that question, you still want to make the NCAA tournament. So
I agree.
Even if you go there and lose a game and you're out,
now getting to the NCAA tournament, you're right, because it would come with winning an ACC championship. That would be a huge accomplishment for this team. That's a great point. And that was actually something that I was thinking of a couple of weeks ago, when that large bid was still kind of in the queue.
Yeah.
But that is out at this point. All right, so Notre Dame spring football practice started yesterday at Notre Dame. A lot of us were over there bright and early watching practice. Before we get into...
What time did practice start?
7:45.
All right.
7:45 is when the warm-up portion...
Wait, they don't go
which
to class?
Which you favor so much. I think they have their classes scheduled so that they go to practice first.
Yeah.
Later into the afternoon.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to do that playing baseball.
You guys were still doing...
We were still
afternoon
doing
football practices, right? When you were...
Yeah, and I think we did a few, like, 5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
deals, because we had guys that had to leave like right at the end to go to class for like an 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Because most of how we had it set up, this was year round, was an 8 a.m. class almost forever while you were there for 3.5-4 years.
Right.
Done by 2 was the latest that you could have a class. Some guys were done before that, like a noon class. So
yeah.
We never had any mid-morning practices, at least to my knowledge. Maybe a couple of Saturday practices, maybe.
You weren't there if they did, huh?
No. I don't know. The spring was like such a haze for me. The first couple years of doing baseball, football was like,
I bet, because it doesn't
like,
stop.
I was like kind of a zombie, you know. Yeah. I was like, okay, where do I go show up now? Do I have the right uniform on? Okay.
Right.
Sounds good. Why are you wearing pads right now to baseball practice?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Go change over there.
Yeah.
So we got to watch the first of five full practices. The next one won't be until late March, the end of March. So let me start with this before we get into some specifics from
yesterday. So it's going to be a totally different looking football team than what you saw yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
When you see them again.
Exactly. Because they've got spring break, of course, coming up. Yeah. Most important thing a player wants to get out of spring camp is what, Evan?
Staying healthy. Number one priority. But if you're in a position battle, your goal is to really try to solidify.
Make an impression.
That out of the spring. Because you don't really want to go into the summer and then into the fall with things kind of up in the air. You really want to put your stamp down in some of those question mark positions on, you know, it could be player A, could be player B. You want to walk out of spring saying, I've won the job. It's mine. And for, you know, the young guys that are now in a position where maybe they're able to crack the two deep or in a starter role, or for early enrollees, it is. You only get one chance to make a first impression. So
yep.
When you roll in, you want to make sure that the coaches take notice of you. If the media is there and they're able to write something based on what they see, you know, you can create some good early buzz. It's hard to break a first impression if you come in and, you know, if you're tabbed lazy or don't take coaching or don't understand, you know, sometimes those things are hard to overcome.
Saw some of the early enrollees yesterday, Drew Pine, the quarterback, one of them, and didn't necessarily have big arm strength. Brendan Clark has more arm strength than him, the guy who's the presumed number two, at least at this point. Drew Pine may be a little smaller than I thought. I mean, I knew he's not like a tall, statuesque kind of guy. He's only a little over 5'10", but didn't necessarily have the frame. But again, he should be a senior in high school right now, so I guess maybe that's to be expected. Clark did throw a couple of interceptions yesterday. But overall, you know, his ball looked okay. A good day from Ian Book, I thought. He was, you know, he looked really sharp throwing the ball, decisive throwing the ball, some good things. He looked crisp out there, hit a ball downfield in the seam, about 30 yards downfield to his left to Tommy Tremble. It was probably the highlight of his day. But, I mean, I feel like we weren't necessarily looking for, oh, is he going to push the ball downfield? Field more, all that kind
good.
Of stuff. Much fewer questions yeah. about Book, it seemed like, this year than a year ago.
At this point now, you know what you're going to get with him.
Right.
And I think that's good on all parties. Not that in the media, we can probably steer some things, and if we're asking questions at media availability. But, you know, and I've said this now, I've said it even throughout last season, is and then well into the offseason now, you've got what you've got. You know, let's not try to change his strengths. Let's try to highlight those. And early on, too, in spring practice, I mean, it should kind of be status quo. if you're seeing a ton of issues, then there's red flags. But this is a pretty veteran team. It's guys that have gone through spring practice before. It's guys that have gone through fall installs. They get the mental side. They get what it takes to prepare. And I think that those are all positives. You know, as you move through the spring, it's going to be now, you know, developing some chemistry and camaraderie. But, you know, they can really start to dial in now, being mentally perfect and practicing like champions, because they have quite a few guys that are coming back.
Yeah. So the star of yesterday's practice, unquestionably, was Kevin Austin, the wide receiver, who, of course, missed all of last season due to a university-imposed suspension. So Brian Kelly, understandably, asked right away about Kevin Austin after yesterday's practice, and here's what the Fighting Irish head coach had to say.
He's always had the talent. You know, he's obviously doing the things right, you know, both on and off the field. His development has been one that we're really pleased with, and that's why you're seeing a lot more of him, you know, on a day like today.
And we did see a lot more of him, and we saw him make a variety of different catches. His explosion off the line looked good. His route running looked sharp. He went down to make catches. He made back shoulder catches with a defender right draped right on him. Tariq Bracey was kind of the, I don't know, if whipping boy might be a little bit too much, but he was playing boundary corner. Brian Kelly was asked about that after practice as well. He said Tariq's probably not going to play boundary corner, but it was kind of a numbers thing with Sean Crawford. He had a little bit of a hamstring, and it was just, you got to put somebody over there. And Tariq Bracey got to be the guy. So as a result, Javon McKinley and Kevin Austin both made some back shoulder catches over the much smaller Tariq Bracey. But, you know, it was Austin, Lawrence Keys, Braden Lindsey. Those were the three number one group wide receivers yesterday. And I think we've all been waiting to see Kevin Austin. And,
well, it sounds like you're anointing him an All-American already after this first practice.
Don't get out the anointing oil, as Bill Parcells used to say. Don't get out the anointing oil.
I'm always cautious in the spring. You know, there are some big spring winners, and, you know, everything points to Kevin Austin's skill set as being elite, you know. Mm-hmm. And really, if you look at, you know, this first group of receivers, there's a lot to be excited about. I'm going to, you know, kind of jump into coach speak here. What we'll probably hear is, and the questions will be, you know, since we won't really have access, is what's his consistency then like from practice? It's really easy to get up for practice one. I mean, you haven't played football in a while, you know, and for him too, not being a part of the team even last fall, this is my opportunity now. So are you able to maintain that attention to detail and consistency from practice one up until the spring game? And then it's got to carry over into what your approach is going to be in the fall, because right now you're not playing games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not to say that there isn't a high level of focus. It's just different, okay? It's just different in the spring. The feel and the environment when you're prepping for a game is different. So it's awesome to hear those things, right? And there should be excitement. But we've
got a long road.
Pump the brakes a little bit. You know, once we start to get into the fall and he's doing that same thing, and now instead of Tariq Bracey, it's, you know, X, Y, and Z player for Western Michigan for Clemson. You know, that's when we want to see that and have that conversation.
Absolutely. So, another topic of conversation from yesterday: Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune, and of course Budweiser's weekday sports beat, asked Brian Kelly about this new Tommy Rees, Lance Taylor combination, with Rees the offensive coordinator and Taylor the run game coordinator. Eric asked if the line play would be improved in 2020 compared to last year. And Brian Kelly kind of took exception with that, the notion that the line play needs to be improved. So we'll hear what he had to say about that, and then we'll come back and get some of your thoughts on what he has to say. Here's Brian Kelly.
I don't know that we were that bad last year. We scored a lot of points.
Right.
There seems to be this narrative out there that we weren't very good at running the football. We were a pretty good offense last year. So we keep parsing last year. Our job is to win football games. And we're going to continue to work on that focus of everybody needs to improve in every facet. It's not just the offensive line. It's going to be tight end play, running backs, quarterbacks. And so, I don't know, there's this kind of pervasive feeling that, you know, the offensive line's got to get better. I got to get better. You know, the wide receivers have got to get better. Everybody's got to get better. And across the board. So I think we can get off that train of the offensive line's got to get better. Everybody's got to get better.
All right, Evan, are you on that train, choo-choo, that the offensive line needs to get better?
Oh, the first part of it I think is funny. You know, I think most Notre Dame fans hear Brian Kelly say, the offensive line was pretty good. It's probably going to be like, is that what we're okay with
pretty good
now?
We're okay with pretty good.
Is that our standard? Is that acceptable? but, you know, what a coach answer. I got to get better. You know, the janitor's got to get better.
That's right.
You know, the guy that clicks on the lights, he's got to
get better.
We all got to get better. So, and you know, with a year, too, and the number of guys that are back on the offensive line, you're going to get, my assumption is you're going to get a better product.
Yeah.
You know, another year in the system, another year of standing next to the same guy and communicating with the same guy. And I think that all those things will lead to maybe a perceived improvement. But I think that that's just usually the natural trend. If you look at college football in general, you know, you come in, you're pretty raw, you're adjusting to the speed of the game and the knowledge and now all of the preparation, what you're seeing, and you usually don't play maybe in year one, and now you play in year two. And, you know, once you get a year or two under your belt, it's just kind of, it's like walking or breathing, really. Yeah, I'm out here playing football. I know this guy's walking down in the box. I'm going to communicate with the guy next to me. Maybe I didn't do that last year.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here are some numbers, though, that go to what we're talking about here. Because the numbers say Notre Dame averaged 179 yards rushing per game. Solid, but not great, right? Just start with that number right there, the average, 179 rushing yards per game. They went 11-2, which, as Brian Kelly said, they won a lot of games. Okay, that's a true statement. But with all due respect...
Oh, you can say whatever you want.
That's right. Here it comes.
All right.
46 rushing yards against Georgia. First loss of the season.
Okay.
47 rushing yards against Michigan. Second loss of the season. So they averaged 179 a game, but in their two losses, they combined for 93 rushing yards.
Well, that's why
big
they
factor,
lost.
Right? Well, and then there were four other games where they were held well below that 179-yard-a-game average, 105 against Navy. Now, they didn't necessarily need to run against Navy. I guess you can make that argument. 106 against Virginia Tech. 157 against both New Mexico and Virginia. They struggled against a New Mexico team to run the football and had to resort to the two shuttle passes that resulted in long touchdowns. You can say, well, it substituted for the running game, but it's still part of the passing game. Those were completions for Ian Book, and it helped pad Ian Book's numbers.
So you're saying there's some hidden yardage here? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, now you can also go to the other side and say, well, they only allowed 15 sacks all season, which is a really good number. But when you look at those numbers in the running game and you boil it down specifically to the two losses where they could not run the football, they have to get better against the top-tier competition on their schedule with being able to run the football.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you look at most elite matchups, it's going to come down to controlling the line of scrimmage, which usually is rushing the football, and the turnover margin. And in those games that they lost, it didn't happen. And that was, you know, really the deciding factor.
Well, I said this yesterday when Eric Hansen and I were talking about this. If Ian Book is going to pull a Joe Burrow and turn around and throw 50 to 60 touchdown passes next year, then maybe you don't have to worry about the running game as much. But Joe Burrow, you know, because Notre Dame was kind of on par with what LSU did running the ball last year. But I don't necessarily see that big leap coming from Ian Book.
I mean, it was a historic performance.
It was.
One for the ages.
Yeah.
He completed 80% of his passes.
You got that right.
60 TDs. 5 interceptions only?
Yeah.
3? 2?
I think it was 6.
6?
60-6.
It's unbelievable.
It is.
That covers a multitude of sins.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Don't want to rush the football? Throw 70 touchdowns.
You're right about that. So, speaking of Ian Book's touchdown passes, Darren Pritchett and I had this as a rapid-fire question last night. Which number will be greater in the 2020 season? Ian Book's touchdown passes thrown or Braden Lindsay's receptions?
I just like to say that, you know, the offseason brings out so much fun in coming up with interesting questions and polls. And
with all due respect, is coming
well,
here.
No, I'm not going to do that to you. It's just, it's the time of the year.
Yeah.
You know, what else you got to talk about?
Gotta come up with something,
Let's come
right?
up with something.
Yeah.
This right here, I mean, the more you think about it, based on Lindsay's production last year in limited time.
11 catches.
And Book's perceived poor year by most people, I would say, most fans.
By many.
34 touchdowns.
34,
passes,
yeah.
11 receptions for Lindsay.
Yeah.
This one's, I'm going to go See, here's the thing, though, is if Lindsey ends up having, I mean, you could toss him the ball and he might go 80 yards.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, I feel like increased touches could be potentially more touchdown passes than for Book.
Total touches as opposed to receptions might be the thing for him. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know, because if I was Tommy Rees, which, you know, he was a quarterback, he's going to call the shuffle pass, not the handoff to Lindsey.
Yeah.
Just to get Book's stats.
But you can also only go to that well so many times, right?
Well, what's the difference between
handoff? Let's figure out how to disguise it really well.
Well, if you're really fast, it doesn't matter.
And he showed that.
Yes, he did.
He turned that corner with bodies in front of him.
So I have to answer this question, huh?
Yes, that was the point of this question.
Okay.
Is you have to answer.
All right. Okay. let's see. I'm going to say, between the and the three receivers, I'm going to say Ian Book. I'm going to go with Ian
Book's number is going to be bigger.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ian Book, and here's why I'm going to say this. I think with the receiving core that they have, with guys that are fairly unproven, but with a lot of upside, I think you're going to see a fifth-year, multiple-year starter Ian Book spread the wealth.
Okay. Last year, two wide receivers had over 40. It was Chase Claypool with 60-plus, and it was Chris Finke with 41. Yeah. And then Cole Kmet had over 40
With Tremble in the mix, too. I don't know. I think
Brock Wright was out there with the ones.
But I like Tremble so much more in the slot as a pass catcher. You know, I know Brock
Wright's
going to be great in line.
Tremble is more, not that he's Gronkowski, but he is more in that mold. You're right, as a pass catching kind of guy.
I mean, I could see four or five guys in that 20 to 30 range. I really could.
Yeah. I mean, and the total touches is a good point with Lindsey, because I think he's going to have to get the ball in other ways.
You're
going
to have
besides
to be creative.
Just, yeah.
And that'd be smart, too, I mean, to do. So. Yeah,
but the thought of him opposite Kevin Austin, you know, the ability for both those guys to stretch the field. I'm going to stick with my answer that Lindsey has more, because I think you're talking for Book somewhere right around that 30 to 40 range again. So 40 is probably the number that you're looking at.
Which Irish fans, if you're paying attention, would put him in the top one or two touchdown passes for his career.
Right. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we will continue with some spring football conversation, some more thoughts from Brian Kelly that we will have, and also Link Jarrett, the new Notre Dame baseball coach, joined Darren Pritchett and I earlier this week on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. He had some interesting things to say. And, of course, Evan Sharpley didn't just play football at Notre Dame. He played baseball for the Irish as well. So we've had a lot of thoughts on Notre Dame baseball in the time that we've done this show. We'll let you hear some of Link Jarrett's comments, some things potentially on the way to Notre Dame, how he runs the offense, a lot of different stuff. We'll do that when we continue with Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, with the Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer, live from O'Rourke's Public House at Eddie Street Commons at Notre Dame. Stop by for lunch. 26 different beers on tap every day, not just the Guinness that Evan Sharpley has, but you can get 26 different beers as well. And, of course, you can also partake in a Bud Light Seltzer if you'd like. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, back out live at O'Rourke's Public House. We're presented, of course, by Bud Light Seltzer. O'Rourke's is your St. Patty's Day headquarters, Tuesday, March 17th. It's coming up. Dress up in your festive green. Head to O'Rourke's. They're going to be open at 8 a.m. St. Patrick's Day, with all your favorites being served all day and all night, including family dining until 10 o'clock. The live music begins at 1 o'clock. And what would St. Patrick's Day be without green beer?
Yeah, I don't know.
They'll have green beer all day long, of course, as well. And they also have the largest collection of Irish whiskeys in the state. 75 Irish whiskeys at O'Rourke's. And they'll maintain those 26 beers on tap.
That'd be quite a St. Patty's Day if you tried to sample all seven.
Oh, my. Yeah, they'd have to put you in a wheelbarrow and take you home, I think.
Well,
Brian Miller, our sales guy. I know he's been there
before. Can't drink all day unless you start in the morning, so just get here at 8 a.m.
That's right. Well, we were starting to talk some Notre Dame spring football in the first segment. We'll continue that. We'll transition into some Fighting Irish baseball talk as well. Baseball is underway in college. They're heading into their fourth weekend of the season this weekend, and the Fighting Irish opening ACC play at North Carolina. So we'll get to that again. But first, though, a couple more comments that I wanted to let you hear from Brian Kelly after yesterday's first practice of the spring. They hired John McNulty as the new tight ends coach this offseason, just announced it earlier this week, just in time for the start of spring football practice. He and Mike Mickens, the cornerbacks coach. But here's Brian Kelly on why he decided to hire John McNulty as the tight end coach.
We really needed somebody dedicated to the position. And I think in the interviewing process, what I really liked about his presentation to me was his focus solely on teaching the techniques and his experience working with multiple tight ends. I thought, last year when your offensive coordinator was the tight end coach, the guy that gets left out sometimes is the tight end because he has so many other responsibilities that position in itself required much more focus and attention. And I thought he did a great job of showing why he should get this job. And I liked his presentation. I liked the way he handled himself. I liked his experience. And I liked his recruiting experience geographically as well. So there were a lot of things to like about him, but primarily it was his focus on the position.
A lot of experience McNulty has. He's been around the NFL for a long time, a few college stops as well. Evan, your thoughts?
Well, first off, poor Chip Long. Poor guy.
Gets to be everyone's whipping boy.
Thrown under the bus for not coaching the tight ends while he's running the offense.
Even though Cole Kmet might be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah. It makes sense. I mean, he hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's true. When you're an offensive coordinator, and I don't think that it was, purposeful on, hey, we're not going to develop the tight ends.
No. Not by any means.
And even how it works, I mean, there's still indie periods, and at practices where we were there, Chip Long's still working with the tight ends.
Sure.
But now you do. You have someone who's going to be, in that room, is going to be the voice, who's maybe standing on the sideline during your offensive whether it's move the field or team versus the guy that's out there calling the plays and orchestrating the whole thing. Now, the tight end group's going to be standing right next to John McNulty the whole time.
Yeah.
So you're able to have that dialogue and maybe get coached up more on a play-by-play basis.
Sure.
Whether it's a physical rep or you're getting mental rep. So I like it. Again, experience is kind of the word I think that, comes along with this. So, there's it'll be interesting to see how he meshes with the rest of the staff.
Yeah.
You never know.
And, I mean, that's a big part of this, obviously, as well. And Tommy Rees had worked with him before when Tommy was with the Chargers, so that did play a role in this. But, only time is going to tell. We're not going to see right away. Mike Mickens got to see him sort of in action for the first time yesterday. High-energy guy. He was pretty vocal, moving around the field and stuff like that, and his first time on the field with these guys.
Too here.
Yeah, it was.
But bring it.
Just noticed that he was really hands-on, working with some of the younger guys, less experienced guys, trying to bring them up. So just, again, it's like you're going to glean anything from the first day of practice, but he was very active. It kind of had a little Clark Lee kind of vibe to him, the way he moved around the field.
I got a question for you. During these practices, are you allowed to post anything that the coaches say? Because I did a fun segment maybe 3 or 4 years ago that ended up getting shut down.
Yeah, I don't think we're supposed to do
not
that.
Not able to do that anymore.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. I it was one of my better segments I did.
Well, especially if you were standing down by where Mike Elston was on that end of the field, you always got
some good ones.
It's different now because, it's not in Loftus anymore.
Oh, that's right.
It's in the new facility.
Yeah, that's right.
So previously, we were down at one end zone is where the balcony was. Now, the balcony goes who goes is across the sideline, end zone to end zone.
Not that I was a veteran by any means, but I would just ask to be put on the camera duty.
Ah, so you're down closer to the field.
I could walk around a little bit closer to the field.
That might be why you got shut down, because you're hearing stuff that not everyone is hearing.
No, that's probably true. but I'll tell you what, we do the top five sound bites of the day.
Uh huh.
Usually some solid stuff.
Solid gold. All right, Brian Kelly. Also, Tommy Reese got promoted to offensive coordinator this offseason after Chip Long was let go, and Brian Kelly explained why Tommy Reese was the man as Notre Dame's offensive coordinator.
I don't know if this has been talked about as much, is that what I was looking for in the offensive coordinator, one of the key components there was that I wanted the coordinator to be the quarterback coach. And I just think that relationship is really key to having great communication, and some of the nuances that occur in play calling require that relationship be with the coordinator. And my success and my experience has found that if you're not coaching at that position, there's a bit of a separation there that can occur. And I wanted it to be at that quarterback position. So Tommy had done that and was on a job interview during the bowl preparation and really liked the way that that went. So his relationships are really good. What really has been, for me, impressive is his relationships with all the players, not just the quarterbacks. Because you can't just be the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach. You've got to have great relationships with the offensive lineman, the offensive line coach, the running backs, the running back coach, all of them. And he commands the room. He has really good interpersonal skills. He has a good sense and awareness. And he's going to do a great job at the position in which he's been hired for.
Did I hear him say he got the job because he played for Brian Kelly and ran his offense? I think I did. Was that the beginning?
He said he wanted his offensive coordinator to be the quarterback coach. So, Mr. Former Quarterback, how important do you think that is?
Well,
you may have heard slivers of what you said.
You know what
too.
I mean? It's the most important position on the team.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Now, I mean, not everyone who's been an offensive coordinator and had a high level of success was the quarterback's coach as well.
Results again, do vary. This is a former Brian Kelly quarterback.
Yeah.
Now able to run and be an extension of his offense, which I know that Kelly has to love.
He understands how Brian Kelly wants that offense to run.
I heard nuances.
Yeah.
That was Tommy Reese.
Yeah.
He knew the nuances of Brian Kelly's offense. That's why he played, and that's why he had success. Not because he could throw it 80 yards, not because he ran a – what would he run? Not because he ran a five
40, right?
Five, yeah. He ran a five.
Yeah.
He ran a five.
He was
vertical leap, maybe 21.
Yeah.
Tommy, I don't know, Tommy. Sorry. Well, we can do this another.
Your vertical leap is?
Well, it used to be good. It's not anymore. But what do I need to jump for?
No, I'm just
neither
saying.
Does he. Okay. No. When he was playing, well, we were playing. Yeah, I would have. Mine would have been higher.
Okay.
But anyways, nuances. You know, and that's what Brian Kelly wants. He wants someone who knows his offense and is able to then communicate that to not only the quarterback position, to Ian Book and the rest of the guys in that room, but the entire offense too.
Yeah.
So, and Tommy does. He's a confident guy. He's gonna walk in and he's gonna do a nice job. The relationship part, that's another aspect too that I think we're seeing more, and why we're getting younger coaches at coordinator positions.
The relationships
too, with this next gen of athletes. There aren't too many coaches now where it's a closed door, don't talk to me ever. Yeah. It's not
right.
Like that.
Right.
The kids won't come to the school if you're like that.
Right.
You've got to pat them on the back and have a cool Twitter handle. Tommy's used to be Tommy Pickles. I think he switched it, though.
Did it really?
Yeah, it was Tommy Pickles.
I don't even remember it being Tommy Pickles.
Yeah, from Rugrats. That was way back, though.
Man. All right. I tell you what, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll let you hear from Fighting Irish baseball coach Link Jarrett. Some interesting things in the conversation we had with him on Sports Beat this week. The biggest adjustment for him coming up north, of course, he was in North Carolina not the University of North Carolina, but in North Carolina before he came here. His offensive style and some adjustments that are potentially, not potentially, that are on the way to the turf at Frank Eck Stadium. Yeah. We'll do that. And if we have time, more from Trevor Bauer. He just keeps giving us content, which is awesome. So we'll do that when we return to Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharply live at O'Rourke's Public House, presented by Bud Light Seltzer, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharply on the Leprechaun Lunch, coming to you from O'Rourke's Public House, Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame. 26 different beers on tap every day. Plus, they carry the largest collection of Irish whiskeys in the state with 75. Make plans to celebrate St. Patrick's Day here at O'Rourke's at Eddy Street Common. They'll open at 8 a.m. that day. Live music starts at 1 o'clock. Leprechaun Lunch, of course, is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Thanks, though, to Danny Bennett, the general manager of O'Rourke's, for having us out here today. Well, earlier this week, we had first-year Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. The Fighting Irish are 7-2 after a three-game sweep at Presbyterian last weekend. They open ACC play at North Carolina this weekend. Some comments from Link Jarrett heading back to North Carolina, where he coached prior to coming to Notre Dame. What's the biggest adjustment Link Jarrett had coming up north? And his answer surprised me a little bit.
There's a couple ways to look at this. I'll tell you this. It's the first time in my career that you can plan out your practice and actually do it. Because, you know, in North Carolina, you may get a week where we were not equipped to go inside. So you were waiting field conditions, weather conditions. There were so many variables when you're trying to get your field ready for a potential practice. And when it got to 2:30 or 3 o'clock, you still may not know if you can execute the practice plan that you drew up. I will say that that has been a little bit refreshing for me at Notre Dame. I know most of it's inside, but you know that once you draw it up, you're going to be able to go do and work on what you plan working on that day, whether it's indoors in Loftus or in your indoor facility at Eck. You're going to be able to do what you plan to do. It's how well you plan it and how creative you are. So the structure and staying on track was actually a little bit refreshing. I'm not dealing with the tarp. I'm not dealing with frozen infield clay and whether you could go outside or not. Yeah. So that's been pretty nice.
So there's Link Jarrett. Evan, did you ever think of the fact that you had to do all those workouts inside when you were playing baseball at Notre Dame as an advantage?
I'll tell you what, Link. You're going to be able to recruit
He's
if you're selling
that
right there, baby. I love it. Frozen clay.
He's selling ice to Eskimos.
Down in the southern states, frozen clay?
I know. That kind of surprised me a little bit.
No chance.
Frozen clay.
But no, he's – that's good. I like that.
Yeah. I mean
– sell it.
Go for it. Here he is discussing the offensive style that the Fighting Irish now have under Link Jarrett at Notre Dame.
And we have a guy in Nico and Gilgenbach when he's on it. They can hit fly balls that go out to the opposite field, but it's not like you see in the big leagues. So basically everybody in a major league lineup could hit an opposite field fly ball type home run. And I don't think you get that in college. Therefore, you have to find other ways to generate runs against good arms. And stealing bases and bunting and hit and run, that's a little bit more in line with how we have to play to perform the way we want to perform. And I saw it this weekend. Like, you're going to run into an arm that you may not have the outright capabilities to just beat him swinging the bat. It sometimes catching them off guard and stealing third base and squeeze bunting, those type of things can almost distract and unravel a good pitcher who's not used to having distractions and negative things happen to them when they're on the mound. So we have to use it, and it does win.
So what do you think when you hear that, Evan?
I mean, you play to the strengths of your team. You know, you're not going to have up and down the line guys that are going to be able to hit home runs all the time. And they have a couple guys in their lineup. You know, Nico Cavadas, a local guy from around here, as far as some power numbers early on, you know, has put up some good power numbers. The big thing is going to be, how does that play in ACC?
Yeah.
You know, you're playing against teams like Clemson, and you're playing against teams like North Carolina, and it's different than playing against Presbyterian, which, that's no offense to them. The Blue Hose is their, I wanted to look up what's their nickname, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
The Blue Hose. So you're going to have to, you know, when you aren't able to put up 9 runs, how are you going to be able to create some? And they've got some guys with some speed. You know, one cat right now is leading the NCAA in stolen bases. He's got 13 already.
Right.
So I like what they're doing. You know, you've got to do some other things.
Let me ask you this, though. When you hear that, to me, that sounds more like a Paul Maneri approach, especially than a Dave Schrag approach to offense.
Well, it sounds like there's an approach. Yeah.
Bingo.
You got to have
right,
one.
But that was because Maneri did a lot of hit and running. They did a lot of bunting, right? And, I mean, because I realize bunting is not sexy. A lot of people don't like it. But if you do it in the right spots, I mean, Joe Madden shows
it. It's not like you're going to, you know, all 9 guys are going to go.
But some of Maneri's most successful teams also set program records for sacrifices.
Pitching, defense, and timely hitting. So if you got to bunt a guy over, then you got to get him in too. And that's going to be the sign of a good team is, okay, if we do use that sack bunt, get him to second, now someone's got to man up and get him in.
Okay, last thing from Link Jarrett, something they're going to do at X Stadium with the turf this summer, an adjustment coming.
Green out. Oh, no.
Our field turf is one of the original field turf type fields, and what they've done in the last 3 or 4 years is they've started to alter the turf a little bit, so your dirt areas, like the home plate dirt circle and the baselines and the infield dirt, even though it's turf, they've created ways to allow it to play a little bit more like clay. And we're actually going to redo our infield this summer, and there's 3 programs that did it this past offseason, this summer, that they love it. And they said it's very similar to a baseball field, like clay. And I think the way I like to run the games and coach, and the guys we're trying to recruit that are very athletic, I think it'll lend nicely. And, you know, it's obviously within the confines of the rules. You're not trying to alter to the point of cheating on what you're doing, but it's more of a baseball type synthetic turf, which I love.
What is it then?
I don't know. That's what I'd like to know as well. We were sort of running out of time when we got to this, so we didn't get to really do a whole lot of follow-up with that. One thing, though, that I do wonder is, because those cutouts around the bases, they are still turf. They're different color, but why not just put dirt in?
Well, I didn't understand. I didn't understand that, you know, when they put it in.
Yeah.
Because a lot of places will do that. You know, the mound is a mound with dirt and clay. Home is too, and then so are right around the base pass. I mean, you see now, you have to really adjust how you slide on most of these. Like, okay, especially when it's wet, too.
Uh-oh, we've got our mango Bud Light seltzer coming.
You've got to really dial in when you're going to start your slide so you know when you're going to stop. So I'd be really interested on how another synthetic-type turf is going to play more like clay.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do if they put less pellets
in
it.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. We'll have to figure it out.
All right. We've got just enough time to work this Trevor Bauer in.
Okay.
Here's a snippet from a Cincinnati Reds broadcast when Bauer was pitching this week.
He just flips the glove out, like towards the batter, that he's telling his catcher it's going to be a fastball. He has gone that motion. There's another one. 3, now 4 times in a row, and every one of them in fastball.
Yeah. Just down here with Derek Dietrich, you guys were talking about Bauer giving up what he was throwing to Beatty there, and do you have an answer for this?
In fact, I do. You know, Trevor and I are good friends, and if you follow baseball this offseason, there's a little thing going on with sign stealing. So Trevor's not too fond of it, so he figured he's going to try something new this season, and he's going to start telling the batters what's coming, and that way there's no, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts about what's going on. Just here it comes, try to hit it.
Well, he put a charge into one. I'm not sure I would recommend it throughout the season. One batter was fun, though.
Yeah, his fastball was playing up, and he looked good, and we'll see. You never know. Trevor's always going to do something nuts, and, you know, we enjoy him, so it's pretty cool.
He's our nuts. That's why they enjoy him.
Give it back.
awesome.
Did you see any of this?
Oh, I watched
He's basically doing bullpen signs out there with
fastball.
His glove.
Yeah. Changeup.
Fastball changeup. Here we
here
go.
Try to hit it.
Just show him and let him hit it.
It's awesome. Spring training's been fun so far.
I hope Trevor Bauer gives us something new like this every week.
Spring training has been awesome. You've had some really good mic'd up moments.
Yeah.
With Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo. There was obviously this. And then how many times the Astros have been getting hit.
There was another one, I guess, where they had the Mets first baseman
Pete
Alonso.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, doing a little play-by-play.
He was mic'd up doing some play-by-play. It's been great
stuff
Chris
Bryant was great. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Is the ball's coming
yeah,
in?
That's right. That's right. All right, hey, I'll be out at LaPorte tonight. We've got two sectional semifinals coming up. Culver Academies against Plymouth at 6. Adams and Michigan City at 8. We've got the championship game tomorrow night at 7. Thanks again to O'Rourke's for having us out today and General Manager Danny Bennett. We've enjoyed being out here. Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer. I'm trying to remember where we are next week, Evan. I think, are we back at Barnaby's? Does that sound right?
That is correct.
All right, we are back at Barnaby's next week in Mishawaka, so we will be there. Talk to you then. WSBT South Bend.